It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3. Two, one.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
Shoot the Wisp, Ms. Marvel, Volume 1, No Normal.
I'm Sean.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Mike.
And we have two very special guests today. We have Usman Malik. You're first on my screen, so you get to start first. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Usman. I am a science fiction and horror writer. I'm originally from Pakistan, and currently I'm resident in Florida. And that's all about me.
And you're currently in Pakistan.
I am currently in Pakistan right now. I'm visiting, yes.
Awesome. And our other guest today is Mahvish Murad. Hello.
Hello. My name is Mahvish, as you just said. So do I need to say that again? I'll say that again. I'm Mahvish Murad. I'm in Karachi, always, as we realized earlier. I've been a radio show host for the last decade or so, and I'm a book reviewer. And very recently started a podcast with Tor.com. Are they competition? Can I say the name of that?
Yeah, you can say the name. They're not competition.
I recently started a podcast with Tor.com called Midnight in Karachi.
And I believe the most recent of the Raka Talk, you talk a little bit about this, if I recall correctly.
That's right. We did. And the first episode started yesterday, which was December 5th, with Audrey Niffenegger.
Oh, excellent. I will have to go download it. Right away. Well, in any case, we are here to talk about the first volume of the Ms. Marvel comic by G. Willow Wilson, and among other people doing all of the art and pretty things to make it look nice. I set the rule that we would just talk about what is available in the first volume because individual issues can be a little difficult to hunt down on their own. So we're only technically talking about the first five issues, which are in, as Mike noted, the No Normal volume. Other stuff may come later, but we will see. So why don't we start with a little bit of general reactions, and I will start with you, Mahvish, if you'd like, with just general reactions to the first five issues.
It's all right. That's all. That's a general reaction. It's okay. I read this actually just yesterday, so it's very, very fresh in my mind. I have to be honest, I wasn't really motivated to go read this character, to read this volume, to read this particular Miss Marvel, this young Pakistani-American woman called Kamala Khan. I don't know why I wasn't particularly motivated. I felt like she would be very burdened by cliches. And I'm kind of sad that she was in a lot of ways. I felt like they used every single trope or every single cliche. And I realized that there was a point to doing all of that. And they're playing to sort of the most common denominator. But It just wasn't particularly appealing to me.
Okay. I think that's fair. That's fair. We'll just keep going down for general reactions. We'll kind of unpack some of that in a minute. Usman, what about you, general reactions?
You know, I think I'm with Mahvish on that. The thing about this is, well, you know, like Mahvish said, we do understand that this needed to be done because part of this, it feels like that this was a very deliberate superhero, and which is fine. The big thing about this was that anything that you would read in what we call subcontinental fiction, which is fiction by writers from the South Asian diaspora, you would find in this comic book, and they've kind of piled them on kind of back to back. So it felt like that they made a point of grounding the readers, especially the Western audience, very quickly into that peculiar reality, which is actually more varied than you see here. So in a way, it's a step towards normalization. But for people who live in who are from Pakistan, it kind of feels like it's also a step away from normalization, if that makes sense. That was my general reaction.
Okay, so very, yeah, very similar, the kind of, from the perspective of somebody who lives in a culture, this doesn't seem terribly progressive, I guess, would be the one way to describe it.
Kind of like that, yes.
Yeah, okay. Mike, general reactions?
So I am totally in love with this comic. This gives me the feeling that I had when I first started reading Spider-Man as a kid. I think Kamala Khan is the same kind of hero, and there's a lot of the same thematic ground in terms of, you know, she's a teen and she has to hide her powers from her parents, and she's kind of figuring out how to balance her life. And it does a lot of the teen fiction thing that speculative fiction can do when you have a character that it kind of has an amazing, fantastic life and has a mundane life. I think in terms of its effect on the comics world, it's been a gigantic, resounding success, and it's a part of a larger discussion and movement within the industry about representation and whose stories do we tell and for whom. And along those grounds, I adore it. I could definitely understand it being more appealing along some lines for someone who has not had the lived experience of being Pakistani or a teenage girl in Jersey City or Muslim in America. But for me, as a straight white guy from a Protestant background, it was very exciting to see a character who wasn't just the same old type of person.
Okay, fair enough. Rachel?
So, I mean, this comic actually made a really big impression on me because the entire reason I picked up the first issue was it was like, oh my God, it's a comic about a person who's not, you know, bleached white. And this actually got me to start reading comics again because I'd given up. So I really enjoyed it. I find it very funny. And actually the first five issues were story-wise, I mean, it was kind of like the origin and the setup and all that. And when I started really liking it, it was actually volume six. But
when Wolverine shows up,
yeah,
yes,
yeah. Like the interplay between Kamala and Wolverine is just amazing. And yeah, I mean, I have a lot of similar feelings to Mike, where I think, you know, since I'm looking at it from the outside, a lot of the things like this. The stereotypey stuff doesn't get me, which probably says a lot about the audience it was being written to. But I also just, honestly, the thing that I like most about Kamala is that she's a fangirl, and she's a fangirl who is being presented as not weird or creepy or whatever. She's just like a nerd, and it's okay, and she does nerdy things, and that's what I like most about her, because that is the way I guess I am most similar to that character, so I kind of can see myself in her.
She is kind of weird.
Yeah.
I'm kind of weird too, dude.
You mean as like a an everyday person she's not weird, or when she becomes a superhero she's not weird?
As an everyday person.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the fact that she, like, meets Wolverine and she's like, I'm trying not to squee, be cool.
Okay,
like,
okay.
Yes.
fair enough. Well, okay, my general reactions, I really do like this comic. One of the concerns I had when I did start reading was the concerns that Usman and Mavesh had actually raised was, you know, were we going to get a stereotypical representation of Muslims? I think there is some of that here. I agree with Mike and Rachel that I understand why they did that. There's a reason for it, and I get it. And my hope is that this comic is kind of a branching off point, which it does seem like it is, maybe not necessarily for representations of Muslim in comic, but certainly for diverse representations, because Marvel is basically on a diversity kick. I mean, they're just like throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, which by comparison to their competitors is actually really good. Because I mean, like right now we've got like a black Captain America. I feel kind of weird about the, like, we're going to make Thor a woman and like, that's going to be normal, but we're doing that too. And there are all these characters are different. The X-Men series right now is just about the female X-Men, all this stuff that's going on. And this was one of those motions is sort of like, well, let's rock the boat a little bit and do something that we probably would not have done 10 years ago. And they probably would not have done this 10 years ago because of what happened to DC when there was the news about Batman Incorporated taking on he's like a French vigilante who is a Muslim from, I think, like North Africa. I could be wrong. And there was such a blowout over just the idea that one of the Batman people could be a Muslim. Like, people had a hissy fit over it. And I remember this. It was such a big stink. And then when Ms. Marvel happened, it was like there was not as much of an issue. I mean, certainly there people had a hissy fit. But that from my perspective, like, that it seemed like this came at the right time. And I love it just because of what it's the potential it has to affect comics for the long term. At least I hope. I mean, maybe I'm a little optimistic, but that's okay. So I think that's just my general reaction. I kind of agree with a little bit of what everybody said. And I see, Mavesh, you had your hand up first. So we'll start with you, since you wanted to make a note about everybody's impressions or something specific you wanted to discuss.
Well, there were about 16 specific things, but I'll stick to three.
Okay.
Also, one being, well, let me see where should I say. Well, what Mike was saying about the origin story and you know, something similar to Spider-Man and stuff. I actually know Pakistani comic book fans of Marvel, who loved Kamala Khan's story arc. And for this same reason, they felt that they were tapping into the same sort of things that made Spidey so cool. And I get that. I completely get that. On the other hand, where I started getting interested was, as you were saying, and as you guys were all agreeing, when she starts meeting Wolverine, that's when I think I found Kamala, as opposed to who Kamala was meant to be, which is what she was in the beginning with the whole origin story. They were just, you know, I understand it was just the use of every single cliche did wear me down. And when that fell away, and then you saw this young fangirl who could have been anyone. She didn't have to be Pakistani. She didn't have to be a Muslim. She could be anyone. She was just this fangirl who had come into these powers and was trying to figure out what was going on. That's when I started kind of liking her. I understand those are not the volumes we're talking about, but that's when I think she came into herself. It's that setup, the premise, that I felt was really, really heavy-handed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I agree that those first five issues are they're pretty heavy-handed. I wonder if how much of that is the limitations of the comic format. And how much of it is as they wanted to get through this part and then get to, like, now we'll have quirky Miss Marvel, like, squeeing over Wolverine and fighting giant alligators in issue six. I do wonder about that. Rachel, I see you had a hand about hissy fits, but I think Mike probably wants to respond to what Marvesh is saying. So we'll skip to Mike just real quick and then we'll come back. So Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I think part of it is that comics, especially superhero comics right now, are slightly trended more toward decompressed storytelling than they were when Spider-Man was created. Spider-Man's origin story is like 8 pages total, and those 8 pages would be the equivalent of 3 issues of this volume. So that because we have this more decompressed style, I think, one, it gives more breathing room to the character, but it also means that every note of her family and her context is hit harder rather than kind of just mixed into the kind of the cultural and setting mass. And I could definitely see that meaning that things get hit a lot harder. But it's also the setup. And then as we talk about in issue 6 and beyond, since we've kind of broken suit on that, that's all established, and then she just goes and has adventures. I think part of this comes down to the different ways of doing representation, that there's talk about the life as is and focus on the character aspects that are distinct and diverse, and then there are have a diverse character and then put them on an adventure where their character matters, but anyone could have that adventure and they bring their personality to it. And I think the volume navigates between those two approaches.
Okay. All right. Rachel, did you still want to make your comment, or should we stick to this really dig in this a little more?
I think it's probably better to just move on.
Okay. All right. Well, does anyone have any response to Mike on that point?
Awkward silence.
No, I mean, I was wondering if someone else was going to start furiously typing things in. Should I say something?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go for it.
Without typing?
Yeah.
I agree with Mike. Let's put it that way. I completely agree with Mike. He's making complete sense. Of course, just saying or understanding that this is the reason why it's happening doesn't stop you from feeling the way it does. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So, like I said, it still feels so much better. I did. It's strange to me because the first sort of few pages, the ones we're talking about that you just explained very correctly as to why they exist the way they do, part of me wanted very much, I wanted to feel offended. And then I just felt bored because I was like, well, this is every cliche ever used for a Pakistani American person. And when are we going to get over this? I'm really glad that they did get over this. I wish it had been fewer, but you know, I think once you get beyond that, like we said earlier, the story does pick up a great deal and that makes it a lot more fun.
Usman?
Yeah. So, you know, I just wanted to, talk a little bit about what Mike and Mavish are talking about. See, the thing is, I've never been a big comic books person because in Pakistan, Mavish and I were talking about this earlier, we don't really have Marvel Comics available in Pakistan. So growing up, I didn't have access to them. I wasn't really a comic book fan in that way. So the way we're perceiving, at least the way I'm perceiving the unfolding of the character's arc and the story's arc, may actually be different from other people in Pakistan who might have loved it, like Mavish pointed out. So that's something definitely to be kept in mind as well. another thing about this character is I feel like younger people who might be Pakistani or Muslim Americans or, you know, any other group who's not, like Rachel said, bleached white, may identify with this kid better than we might. And so in that context, I understand why Ms. Wilson, you know, decided to go that route and decided to pile it all up earlier to give that context and ground the readers in that reality, which is kind of radically different from the reality they're used to in comic books. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I want to actually tag on to that because, you know, as you noted, if you're not a comics reader and never really have been, as Mike was suggesting, right, that there is a tradition in comics that is sort of being rewritten. So like this sort of 5-issue development of who the character is, kind of origin story, would not have existed, you know, in older comics. And that gets even less so the further back you go. I mean, I think the very first X-Men comic, the X-Men are assembled like on page 2. And the very first thing that happens on page 2 is all of the men in the room go, gosh, Jean Grey's really hot. Only they don't say hot. They say something like 1950s style or whatever. So, you know, I mean, really, it's this whole thing about how attractive she is. And she's so beautiful. And like, isn't she awesome? Because she's gorgeous. And it's this really uncomfortable, like, at the time, it probably wasn't. It was probably, like, normal. But that kind of, like, we're just getting jumped into the thick of it and this sort of development. So if you don't have that experience with comics, you maybe don't see how this is actually a movement in the opposite direction. At the same time, that's actually totally valid because, you know, this is in some ways a new entry point, right? If this is the first comic you read and that style doesn't work for you, that can be an issue in and of itself. But I see Mavesh had a hand, so we'll jump to you.
Well, I was just going to say I agree with Usman. Usman, you and I are just going to agree with each other all the time now, right? but here's the deal. Well, like Usman said, I mean, growing up in Pakistan, Kamala Khan is not a Pakistani. She's an American Pakistani. She's a presumed first generation American Pakistani. Her reality is very much different from, say, mine growing up in Karachi or Usman's growing up in Lahore. So obviously we are seeing it from a different perspective. If you spoke to a Pakistani-American, I'm sure there'd be plenty who would disagree with us. The other thing was, as Usman said, growing up in Pakistan, you don't have access to all these comics as easily. Even now, I had to borrow these to read them from my brother-in-law, in fact, who is visiting and lives in the States. So that's how he got them. But here's the thing. As a child, my father would take us to this tiny little shop that called itself a library, and it had these stacks and stacks of dusty old comics, DC, Marvel, you name it. I don't know where they got them from in the early 80s in Karachi, but you would pay like 5 rupees, something ludicrous like that, and you would take a few of these comics home and you could bring them back a few days later and swap them. And my father was a comic book fan. He didn't let us read Archie comics. I think he thought we would speak like Americans, and he had a problem with the gee whiz stuff that was in the Archie comics. But somehow it was okay to speak like Batman or Superman, whatever the reason may be. And I read some of these comics. There were pages missing. I never read them in order. They were just random, like you picked up what had a cover and looked attractive. It was in the old bazaars of Karachi that you would come across. I mean, Usman has probably seen old, dusty, old dog-eared, you know, paper comics lying around. That's how you read them. I never understood the lore of comics till I got much older and the internet came about and people started talking about, you know, the history of things and these long, continual arcs of things. I didn't know about any of that. I knew who these heroes were, but it was all completely random and in bits and pieces. Do you know what I mean? So to now come in and read something like this, and obviously in the last few years when we've had more access to this stuff and now comics are available legally online and digitally, etc., obviously you've tried to catch up, or one has tried to catch up with what's going on. But yeah, it'll never really be like that American kid who can go to the corner store and buy a comic every week.
Yeah, I agree there that experience, even when I was a kid, I had the same kind of experience when I was a kid when I read comics. My favorite hero was Darkhawk, who nobody knows because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so Mike knows who Darkhawk is. Darkhawk's the greatest Marvel superhero that ever existed, and the fact that they tried to kill him off in Avengers Arena is very sad, and they should bring him back and let me write that comic. If Marvel's listening, they should know that I would totally write it. Hint, hint. But I didn't read that in any order. I fell in love with Darkhawk. I got, issue 37 and 2 and 19. I have no idea what the stories were when I was a kid. I've only now been able to do that because eBay was invented and I could buy the whole set. That experience is very similar. And you know, my interaction with superheroes was actually through the cartoons. So I got the narratives there, but I didn't get them in the actual comics. The comics were disjointed because you'd read I had an Iron Man annual number 3, so it was missing the first two halves of the whatever was happening. All I know is Iron Man was fighting some weird mechanical bear. That's it. I don't know what the comic was about. He was fighting a mechanical bear. So I don't know. But in any case, but I understand that kind of going to comics from a sort of disjointed feel and the kinds of changes. And I think Mike, you are wanting to put a hand up. So I will let you talk so that you can save me from rambling.
Sure. Yeah, one of the things that most impressed me about this comic is partially not about the comic and largely about the effect that it's had in Marvel fandom. I was at New York Comic Con just in October, and I saw probably no less than 10 Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel cosplays, and I think 9 of the 10 of them were women of color under the age of 20. And comics has not done a good job of being a welcoming place for women under 20, especially women of color under 20. And the degree to which I think Pakistani Americans and probably a variety of other young women from non-white backgrounds have embraced and adored this character. I was at an after hours event, I was listening to a podcast. Sorry, where G. Willow Wilson was on the podcast, and one of the people in the audience got up and started thanking Willow Wilson for creating this character that she, as a young woman, could identify with, and she was crying as she was talking about this character and the opportunities for identification and for that the character have created mean the world to me. This is somewhat sadly undermined by these probably very valid critiques that I'm hearing from Usman and Mavesh, but I'm hoping that for these young women in America, the character really rings true, and that's super exciting for me because I've been catered to my whole life in comics, and I'd like other people to be welcome as well.
Mike, just really quick, you said you were listening to a podcast and you went robot-y for a brief moment. What was it that you were listening to? Do you recall?
It was a Marvel Comics podcast recording of a panel at New York Comic Con, and a young woman stood up and identified herself as Pakistani American and started kind of giving her thanks and praise to Willow Wilson for that character of Kamala Khan. And she was crying as she was talking, clearly very moved. And so that the ability for this character to be a point of identification and validation for young Pakistani women or for young women of color is, you know, means the world to me because I've been catered to by comics my whole life, and I'd like other people to be welcome as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. Rachel, did you want to jump in?
The one thing, I mean, we keep talking about the stereotype stuff, and, you know, just to be very clear, I have not read a whole lot of comics. I mostly, when I was younger, I had like some random X-Men issues because I really like the X-Men. And by the way, Sean, you're actually wrong because the best Marvel superhero ever is Storm.
Sorry. So anyway, Darkhawk has the cool alien amulet and he like can grow guns out of his back and he's cool.
Storm's a woman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Storm's awesome. But
Storm is the best.
Storm is the best leader of the X-Men we've ever had.
That is true. But Darkhawk saved the universe like 5 times, so what?
Storm has a mohawk.
Darkhawk has razor blade wings.
Insufficient.
Storm wins. Sorry, she has style. Anyway, I mean, obviously I have not read a whole lot of comics, but I'm just kind of wondering, you know, we were talking about the way that Kamala's origin story has a lot of like super, you know, very stereotypical stuff in it that can be very jarring. I'm just kind of wondering, like, how much stereotyping we see in a lot of other superhero origin stories for just, you know, say like, you know, the stereotypical New Yorker stuff. Cause I feel like a lot of comic characters, you know, they get a lot of development over the years. Some of it is very confusing and doesn't make any sense and contradicts itself. But at the base, they all seem to start out very much as kind of caricature-y from what I've observed, which is a very limited sample size. So that's why I was like, I don't know.
I'll say this, that comics historically has been very archetype driven, right? Very specific types of archetypes get repeated. I mean, like Captain America is probably the most obvious version. I mean, in most recent years, he's certainly been more nuanced. But before, it was like Captain America, he punches Hitler, right? He's like the American all too go good kind of guy. That exists in a lot of comics. You get that kind of stereotypical representation of archetypes. And as Rachel notes in the things, who wouldn't want to punch Hitler? Batman did it, right? That was a whole big thing. In recent years, I recently got into comics about eight months ago. The representation of character is a lot more nuanced now. A lot of that has to do with they had to find ways to make characters that had been around for 80 years interesting. So like Cyclops is, he isn't the sort of like really dull, like, what is it that they call Ward from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Milktoast?
Milktoast. He's sort of like he used to be this very dull kind of character.
Ward's a Nazi.
Well, okay, excuse me. he's a Hydra agent / free, I don't, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Point being that's been something they've been working on and trying to creating more nuanced characters. That said, comics are still, from my experience, very archetype driven. They look for, like, we're creating this thing and we're going to sort of repeat that because it's an archetype that works. I don't know how much Ms. Marvel is affected by that. I feel like to some extent it is because she's not the first Muslim superhero in Marvel. I mean, there have been others, but she may be the first that has had her own comic. I mean, I don't know if that's 100% true, but certainly the first that is getting as much attention, because there have been other superheroes of Muslim origin of some description or another in the Marvel canon like 30, 40 years ago, but they're like sort of side characters who just like briefly exist and be like, look, there's a person from Iraq and that's it. Or whatever. So I don't know if that helps at all, but maybe that explains some of why that format still exists here. I could be wrong, and a comic scholar could come in and tell me I'm a moron, though, which is likely going to happen. I'm sure some comics person's going to listen and go, that idiot, he doesn't know anything about comics, which is probably true.
Well, and then you invite them to like write a guest post called Why Sean Duke Was Wrong, and then our questions will be answered. So it works.
There we go. Well, why don't we take a slight detour and talk about some other aspects of this, because we've kind of talked about some of the issues with
the structuring and the different perspectives and how that might affect how we talk about this particular comic. But maybe talk about like the artwork or some of the other elements here, like particularly her origin story of becoming an actual superhero, which is actually related to other comics. The whole Mist thing is from other comics, by the way, but you'd have to have read them to actually know that. I think there's a note in one of the comics that's like issue 17 of some other comic, but in any case. But does anyone have any thought about any of the other aspects of the first five issues of maybe the art or whatever?
Yeah, so Adrian Alfona is the comics artist on this volume and on the series in general, and he's probably best known before this for Runaways. And what I really like about Alfona's art, assisted by Ian Herring as the color artist, is that this art style for me is it's not the big square-jawed heroic style. It's a more human style, and there's places where the characters are awkward and the angles are a little bit off sometime, and it's not a super traditional like Jack Kirby or even a more recent Jim Lee style. It's kind of smaller scale. It's more personal and less kind of everything has to be perfect, which I think fits Kamala's world where she's not grown into the role yet and she's living a kind of an awkward teenager life. And I think that's a solid representation and manifestation of her existence and her kind of heroic journey through the art.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. And anyone else have any thought on the art?
One thing I actually really like the way but the color is done in the artwork. It feels very different to me from the other comics I've read. I have a hard time kind of articulating why, but it feels like the coloration is not as harsh and high contrast as a lot of comics I've read before, and I don't know, it's very pretty. I really like it, but I don't have a lot more to say about the art.
Yeah, the kind of traditional comic flashy, very bright color. This is more muted tones, I guess you might say.
The one thing that I liked best about the comic was Ms. Marvel actually does look brown. That was my
that was
the big thing that I liked. I was happy that she actually does look brown in the comic and doesn't just kind of look like a modified, other Marvel superhero just changed a little bit, you know, no shape change. She actually does look a little bit brownish.
Yeah. Throughout the majority of the comic, with the exception of the moments in which she transforms into Miss Marvel, which we may talk about in a minute. Mavesh?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to bring up. I think that was one of the more interesting things, or possibly the thing that interested me most in those first few issues, was that when she gets... Oh, and we're assuming everyone's read these, right? Because this is not spoiler territory, is it? It's fine, right?
Oh, at this point, if this is official spoiler warning.
Right, we already spoiled the thing about Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
That was way bigger.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: when she gets these powers and she can't control them in the beginning, as you know, every superhero with these powers trying to figure it out, trying to figure them out, and she is changing shape, as it were. It's pretty much shape shifting, and she's changing into the original, right? Carol, what's her name? Danvers? Was that her name?
Yeah,
original Miss Marvel?
Yeah.
So she's turning into this like long leggy blonde woman, much older than, you know, Kamala Khan's 16-year-old, still slightly skinny, awkward teen. And I found that really interesting because I suppose what they're trying to say is that, oh, she thought if she was like Miss Marvel in every way, including physically, that all her problems would be sorted. And of course they're not, but do they really explore the fact that she becomes this person physically and her problems aren't sorted? I'm not really sure if that was completely played out the way it could have been. Once again, it's a matter of what Mike was saying, compression, obviously, in the story and sort of telescoping all of this together into a very compact few panels. But that could have been, I thought, explored a lot more. And I think that was interesting because, you know, that little brown girl who wants to be the average sort of all-American beauty kind of thing who the original Miss Marvel was. And she is, but she can't sort it out even then, and she doesn't know what's going on. Yet she does save Zoe in the beginning in that form, doesn't she?
Yes, she does.
Yeah,
she does save Zoe in the Carol Danvers form, yeah.
And gets shot.
And then gets shot.
It is a little problematic that, and I think it's interesting, problematic in the sense of being interesting because she's trying to figure things out and she realize, obviously, very soon that being another person physically, even if it is what she used to think was an ideal, isn't her, and it isn't going to solve any of her problems or help her be the person, the hero that she's meant to be. I do think that could have been expanded and sort of, I don't know, it could have been more interesting, I thought. But again, like I said earlier, like Mike was saying, with the whole telescoping thing, perhaps that's all they could manage.
Okay, Rachel, I think you had a hand you wanted to kind of respond to what Mavesh said. I think we should really unpack this a bit more. So why don't we jump to you real quick?
Well, I just actually want to say I agree with Mavesh, because there was this very perfect opportunity to kind of discuss the thing that it's like, you know, you become Carol Danvers, who is like the blonde beauty, and then she saves a couple of people, because it's like, oh, this is what a hero looks like. I think what they were kind of doing was playing with that sort of image thing, and it's just they never really got into it maybe quite as explicitly as would have been useful. But it's her idea, like her conception of a hero is Carol Danvers, you know, the blonde woman. And then she kind of comes to the realization that she doesn't have to look like that in order to be a hero. And it's just, I felt kind of like there, if nothing else, the fact that I kind of, when I'm thinking back on the comics, because I did not get to reread them as recently as I would have liked, but I can remember her doing the Carol Danvers thing and getting shot and all that, and then I can remember her just, you know, then going out looking like herself, and I don't really remember the transitionary point between those two, so it wasn't, I don't think it was as much of a plot point as I might have liked, but there is definitely this play with, you know, what does a hero look like? And then, you know, what her role model, you know, and kind of coming up with a conception of herself where she can look like herself and still go be a hero. And actually, you know, she went and she made her own costume, which she likes a lot more than the one that the traditional Ms. Marvel costume, which I also really liked, as she kind of decided to make it her own. But I think there could have been a lot more done with it, which it's kind of weird where you get like the compression and telescoping of plot where like the origin story felt like it was really long, but then what should be a really kind of profound point about self-image doesn't feel like it got as much play as, say, I thought that it should have, because that is a very important thing, particularly for young women, and particularly, I think, for young women of color.
So, Mike, I think you had a hand next. Do you want to jump in on this?
Sure. I did not have that problem with in terms of her negotiating the kind of physical, mental relationship to Carol Danvers, because I felt like it was explored. It probably could have been explored more thoroughly. Because, you know, when the dream Danvers shows up to her, who do you want to be? She says, I want to be beautiful and awesome and butt-kicking, less complicated. I want to be you. And then she says, well, like, well, why don't I feel strong and confident and beautiful? Why do I just feel freaked out and underdressed? So she goes through a couple of these steps. She kind of disowns the costume after saving Zoe, you know, the boots pinch, my leotard is giving a wedgie. So she kind of, over the issues, she goes from unconsciously duplicating Carol Danvers as Ms. Marvel, rejecting how that costume and that identity, that physicality doesn't make her feel strong and beautiful. It just makes her feel underdressed and freaked out, to the more covered Captain Marvel when she is a hero later on, to then creating her own costume. So there's a trajectory in that that kind of smoothed out that arc for me.
A visual trajectory is what you mean.
Yeah, and yeah. Just a character progression in terms of her relationship to herself, her body, and her powers.
Okay, all right. Mavesh, I will cede my hand to you so you can jump in on this, since it was a point you'd raised originally.
Thank you. Mike, I agree with you completely. I think there were some really great moments when that happened. What then irritated me was that she goes home and says to her mom, where's my burkini? I mean, really? Like, that was the last thing. She couldn't have just said, yeah, Hey, I need a pair of tights. I mean, she had a fucking burkini. I mean, I'm sorry, but where does she go swimming in a burkini in Jersey City? I want to know. I don't think her parents seem that conservative. They seem to let her dress how she wants. She's wearing skinny jeans and like little tops the rest of the time. And then she pulled out a burkini, which obviously she hasn't been using because she can't find it. Why does she even own it? I found that very strange. I found that like this little throwaway reference to, oh, this is what Muslims wear when they swim. You know what? Not all Muslims.
Yeah, that I actually had no idea what I kept in translating in my head to bikini, like, and I was like, well, why is she wearing that? And why? It was very confused to me, and I didn't realize that was like a thing. I thought that was some weird. And now you're talking about it. It's actually like it's a piece of swimwear, which I was not aware of.
Right, absolutely. A burkini is a piece of swimwear. The joke is on burqa, which is this all-encompassing, you know, usually black, well, in Afghanistan, blue, this all-encompassing kind of shroud that certain women from a very conservative part of Islam wear. And the other word being bikini, which, you know, everyone knows a bikini. So they mix it together and they call it a burkini. I don't know who came up with this. I don't know what it means. It's basically like a one-piece of swimwear, kind of like, I guess, what surfers would wear, you know, from your neck to your feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe a little less form-fitting. That's what it is. That's the idea. So she pulls out this thing and makes it into a superhero costume. And I feel like G. Willow Wilson maybe was trying to say something that she's taking back that power too. But it felt a little just unnecessary. And again, it's very purposeful and it's very thought out. But I didn't quite. I had a little kind of reaction to it, like a little groan. You know, I didn't need that really.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can certainly see that. I mean, that moment for me was when she's having the argument with her mother over whether or not she's going to wear it. And, like, she's like, oh, I thought you said you'd never wear that. And she's like, well, I'm not going to wear it at a party. And she's like, mom's like, well, you're not going to go to a party because you're grounded. And she's like, I know I'm not going to a party. Like, it's that moment, I think, was too deliberate.
Yeah.
Rather than maybe organic. It seems like, I don't know if it's the comic format or if it's some other element here where there are moments that, like, we're making a point here, but it becomes very sort of like, but it's so obvious we're making a point. Like, we did this on purpose just to make a point rather than sort of something that develops organically and a bit more. I don't know what causes that, if that's just maybe, like, still trying to figure out how this character was going to grow and develop as a person, and, like, that those five issues were also kind of an experiment. But right. It was a moment for me that was kind of like, this didn't seem quite necessary for that moment. Like, she could have just said, like, where is that thing I wear? And the mom was like, well, that's just weird, but it's like in the thing over there. And then that's it. Like, it's just like one panel mentioned and then we're done, rather than this kind of really overblown thing. Yeah. So, Mavesh, go ahead.
Sorry, am I hogging the conversation?
It's okay. You're a guest. You can, you and Usman can talk all you like.
Oh, thanks. Well, poor Osman is like silently waiting for his turn. No, Osman, you can have a go after me.
No, I'm good. I'm a better listener anyways.
Well, here's the thing about the burkini. I agree with you when you say that it felt like a throwaway. You see, it could have even, to me, it felt like it could have come in later. You know what I mean? Somebody could have commented on at some point later, even maybe Bruno or someone who might actually justify that, oh, maybe she's actually worn this, or maybe he knows that her mom forced her to buy it once, or whatever it was. It could have come up later as an, oh, hey, did you turn your burkini into your costume? Of course, I'm not the writer, so this is annoying for me to sit here as a reader and say these things. But yes, it felt quite deliberate and forced, but a lot of these things did. Oddly enough, of course, the burqa and the idea of taking back the power of the burqa reminds me immediately of a Pakistani cartoon called Burqa Avenger that won a couple of Peabody Awards last year. It's extremely popular locally and it did really well internationally. It was translated into a whole bunch of languages as well. You can look it up, Burqa Avenger. It's about a young woman who's a school teacher. A single young woman in a small town in Pakistan who's a school teacher by day, and by night she shrouds herself in this burqa and becomes Burqa Avenger, and she fights all the, you know, the corruption in the system that shuts down girls' schools and things like that. So that's, for me, that was, a lot of people had issues with her wearing a burqa there as well, but something like that to me was a much more elegant and a much more powerful use of this idea of a woman using a burqa to be, I suppose, like I said, to take back the power. I mean, if you say that a woman's being forced to wear a burqa, or a burqa is taking away a woman's individuality or whatever it is, power that you, whatever you want to call it, then something like Burqa Avenger, I thought, was a great treatment for something like that. And then in Miss Marvel, it kind of did really just feel very throwaway.
And I'll add to that, because what Mike had said earlier about the way the visuals sometimes present add some of the depth to the what is maybe not apparent in the either the internal monologue or other parts. Visually, this does a lot of, like, there are moments in this where it answers a lot of this visually. Not this specific moment, but so, like, for example, you know, they go to the youth center to hear, oh gosh, what is his name? I can't remember his name, but he's giving this talk, right?
He's the sheikh, the priest.
Yeah, and so they go to this talk, and what you see is, like, you know, she's around these other, like, her Muslim friends, and you see that they are dressed differently than her. There's no comment about it. It's just visually. Some of them are wearing, oh gosh, what is it called? I've forgotten. Whatever. They're wearing different garb, that identifies a different element of their personal cultural history, or their religious, perspective. And so you see these little things, and it does seem to me that is a much more effective way to get at this, is what you're suggesting, Mavesh. Like, in this moment, they could have just had, like, a passing comment from Bruno, and just had them comment on this thing and had nothing else said about it, because visually you could represent different types of people, different cultural traditions, just visually by looking like, look, these people are different. Because it's throughout the comic, right, she dresses more or less like an average teenage girl. Well, okay, let me maybe that's not entirely true. I've not been around teenage girls in a while. So who knows what they dress like anymore. They could be dressed like bears. But, it, you know, she dresses relatively like what you would think is, like, everyday kind of person in America, rather than different kinds of people. I'm saying this really poorly. So, Mavesh, I think you want to say something on this effect, so I'm just going to shut up.
No, I think I was just going to agree with you, because the couple of scenes in that youth center at the mosque were in a way really great. And her best friend, you know, this sort of side, not sidekick, but other than Bruno, her female best friend is a Turkish girl, which is great, because I think what they're trying to do is show that, okay, all sorts of Muslims, all sorts of parts of the world, some of them cover their heads, some of them don't. Somebody's got a niqab, somebody hasn't. Somebody's got a headscarf, somebody hasn't. And that's great. That's fine. I'm all for that. I actually wanted to bring up one other point with the whole final costume that she comes up with. I love, as Rachel was saying, that she comes up with this. I think that's great that she sort of takes it on to herself and says, I'm not going to go with the classic kind of, or the Miss Marvel classic costume, the leotard and things. I'm going to create my own. That's wonderful. Fantastic. Thumbs up for me. Why does she have this disastrously long scarf around her neck? Do you know how dangerous that is? I mean, come on. She could trap, like, that thing around the gutter when she's going down to catch the crocodiles and throttle herself and, like, strangulate hanging off a gutter. Why would you have a giant, long, skinny scarf? Someone please explain this to me. It makes no sense at all.
No capes.
No, it's not capes. No, it's a long, skinny scarf.
I'm having, like, Incredibles flashbacks.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But you see, the cape is still, I mean, fine, I can see why if they put in a cape, but they put in a long, skinny, yeah. This is again and again, I'm thinking in my head, if she was in Karachi, it would get caught in a, you know, it would get caught in the, like, axle of a bus when she tried to get on. It's a hazard.
As a superhero, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's a great way to strangle yourself.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Mike, you wanted to jump in?
From an art standpoint, having a cape or the scarf there helps create a sense of movement and motion and adds to the kineticism. I totally agree about the practicality, though.
It looked wonderful. It looked great. It was beautiful. You're right. There was lots of movement, and every time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's pretty. And
Mavesh, you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You kind of cut out a little bit. That was weird.
Oh, I was going to say one thing I would like to note about her costume, that I do love, is she's not wearing heels.
Oh, thank you. God, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
I have no idea how any superheroines fight in heels.
Without breaking their ankles? I got nothing. I mean, there's if you look around, there's all these justifications about how it could totally work, but frankly, it's all bullshit, because if you do much fighting, you'd know that you're better off wearing sneakers.
And there's even
you have more surface area on your foot that way.
Yeah, there's even an episode of in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where May, who's like the big kick-ass ninja person of the group, who has to dress in heels because she's got to look all nice for this party. And then she gets in a fight and she's like, she takes the heels off because she can't shoot. She's no good on the heels. And then she whoops ass.
Yeah, so it's certainly, so that's nice. Yeah, but it's probably what Mike was suggesting, yeah, that it's to convey movement on a static page. But as you say, Mavesh, it practically makes no sense. She's going to strangle herself. She might. This comic's not over. So, she did fight giant mega gators, though, so that's a point in her favor, I guess. Well, okay, so I think we're getting close to about an hour on this, and I know people have lives to get to. So any last thoughts? I mean, any last things you really want to raise on this particular set of issues?
I think she should have kept the fanny pack. That's all I can say that she had, because that would have been great.
Trying to make the fanny pack cool, yeah.
No scarf and a fanny pack, or I'm sorry, a bum bag. If for our listeners in the UK,
because
fanny pack is kind of rude.
Is it? Oh
yeah.
Fair enough. Mike, last thoughts?
I adore this comic. It's one of my favorite to read every month, and it gets even stronger after this first volume, when her world starts broadening and she has some team ups. So I commend this on to almost anyone who's interested in comics, especially people who in the past maybe had been rebuffed by the way that women are figured and dressed in comics and the way that women are sexualized, which none of those I think are actual problems in this comic. And the youth of the character is not used as a kind of sexualizing, essentializing aspect. And it's a great comic to be reading because so many other people are reading it if you want to get into the conversation.
Fair enough. Usman?
So, you know, I was just going to say a couple of things about that scar.
Okay.
Certain women up north who put these scars, who don these scars differently, they don't go around the neck. They actually go around the waist. So that could have been a great way to tackle the problem of the scarf around the neck, and it could have been used as another weapon, kind of like a bat belt or something like that. So that's something that just came to my mind about that scarf. The other thing, you know, about the comic as a whole, even though, you know, Mavish and I were talking about the cliches that are present, I think it's great that this is happening, especially if, as most of us know, Muslims have been, you know, I don't want to say, you know, ostracized completely, but they've been kind of condemned by mainstream media. And I think young readers who read these comics and they glimpse this world, this will mean quite a bit to them. A lot of this is going to happen subconsciously for these kids. Words like shalwar kameez, which feature in my stories regularly. I've had four or five stories published this year. You know, shalwar kameez is a word that regularly comes in my stories because my characters wear these clothes, and that's probably the most common garment we wear in Pakistan. So it's good for us as diverse writers to have audience that will slowly be familiarized with this terminology. And I think in the long run, like you guys said, this is a great place to branch off. So I like the first volume. I winced a little bit in the beginning, but I think I'm beginning to like the story arc a little bit. I am probably definitely going to follow it.
Okay, fair. Mavesh, last thoughts?
Usman, you're probably definitely going to follow it.
She got you there.
I kind of wavered there a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Okay, here's the thing. Diversity, brilliant. Thank you for putting this character in. I think it's great. It's a great start. As Usman was saying, there are lots of things about it that are really great. As Mike was gushing, there are lots of things about it that are really great. And, you know, Usman's opinion, my opinion, again, it's a few people who may or may not connect with her. But like I said, once she becomes who she is, as opposed to what her culture is, that's when it all gets really interesting. So if I was to recommend it to someone, say another Pakistani or an American Pakistani, I would say, well, skim past the family stuff in the beginning because it'll either be boring or familiar or, you know, annoying, and get to the bit where Kamala Khan is Kamala Khan. Because there's no such thing as a Pakistani American person. There is a person called Kamala Khan.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would quite agree that maybe that's because I'm a completist, but I agree that it does get much better. By issue 6, it really starts to sing, and I think that's because she gets that confidence in her character of who she is. So I think that from that point on, this comic gets even better. It transcends its original kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of gimmick, I guess, because obviously on some level this is a marketing strategy for Marvel, and so it gets past that into something with a little bit more depth, I think. So I agree on that front. My last thoughts would be I really like the character. Obviously, I'm speaking from an American perspective. I agree with you, Usman, that this is, especially in America, that America's relationship with the Muslim world in general, like at any part, is tenuous. And to have this kind of representation, it sort of, whether or not it was intended as a sort of political rebuttal against a lot of the rhetoric that exists surrounding Muslims in America, it certainly is one that's sort of it operates on that front, I think, for me. And that's I even though there are flaws in it, I think it's good that we can criticize it, because hopefully what that means is that in the future, future representations do better. But this is a good, for me, a good start, and I really, really hope, as we've talked about here, that this has continued impact on comics in general, but maybe also has a cultural impact. In fact, I would love when we get our Carol Danvers Captain Marvel movie, if she actually appears, even if she's not a main character, at least appears, I would be so happy, because then
that might
make... I'm sorry, go ahead.
They'll hire a white girl with a tan to play her. It's Hollywood.
Maybe not if it's Marvel. Because Marvel...
You think? I don't know. I'm not to sound cynical, but, did you see that Ridley Scott movie? The trailer?
Yeah, but that's not Marvel.
Yeah, not Marvel.
That's true.
I agree with you totally.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Exodus is a garbage that nobody should ever go watch. There is no excuse to have Christian Bale playing Moses. No excuse. I mean, he's a great actor and all, but he's from Britain. I don't understand why it's so hard. Like, just get somebody who's not from Britain.
But this is amazing to me that you think Marvel would actually do this and they would actually pick somebody who, fit the part.
Well, she's such a high-profile character right now, and is selling gigantically on the comic stands. They just announced a Black Panther movie and the Captain Marvel movie. I think the high ups at Marvel have realized that there is a ton of money in selling to a diverse audience.
Well, here's what I will say about Marvel. Because you're right, Mike, but Marvel already has... I mean, look, its track record is fairly limited because obviously the characters that they've been presenting are largely white characters. But in the movies, they switched Nick Fury. They made him Samuel L. Jackson because you could just put him in any role. He'd be basically amazing. They switched him, and that's now canon in the comics. Nick Fury in Ultimates is now basically Samuel L. Jackson, which is awesome. It happened the other way around. Whatever. It doesn't matter. You get what I mean, though.
For sure.
Yeah. We also have Luke Cage is coming on Netflix, who was... Power Man, one of the first African American superheroes in the Marvel, at least major superheroes, had his own comic. You do have Black Panther, who is African, who eventually does marry Storm. So I don't think we're going to get a Miss Marvel movie. I think at best we would get she might appear in a movie, and I think that Marvel's track record suggests that they would cast somebody who would be appropriate for the role, just based on what seems to be their track record so far. I mean, they even put the Falcon in. The Falcon. We got Falcon. That was amazing. Sorry, Captain America too. I may be a little bit of a Marvel fanboy.
Yeah, I think the fear of whitewashing the character is a real fear, because that has been done so many times before. But I don't think that is something that would happen in a Captain Marvel movie. In terms of Kamala Khan, because I think the cost benefit is so easy to do it right.
And Marvel knows how to do it at this point. I mean, they've got a model that works. I mean, granted, by the time we get a Captain Marvel movie, I mean, Marvel could just tank. Because that's like in 800 years, right? Because they planned this out until like 3500.
Yeah. Well, and by 2018, Ms. Marvel could be the number one best-selling superhero comic ever. And they'd be like, oh, yes, now we will definitely have Ms. Marvel. And actually, we're going to do a TV show and movies and all the things.
Maybe.
Because they like money.
Yeah. I mean, I you're right. I mean, that fear in Mavesh is, I think that is totally valid. Because Hollywood continues to do it. And even when Ridley Scott's comments about why he cast, you know, white Europeans to play ancient Egyptians, his excuse was, if it had been Mohammed so-and-so, I would have never got the money to make the movie. And my first thought was like, well, then you're a shitty director who doesn't know how to make good projects and convince people to pay for it, because you're an idiot. I mean,
he's fucking Ridley Scott. He would have gotten the money.
I know, he's Ridley Scott. It means he didn't try. He didn't even bother. He just decided I was going to whitewash the whole damn thing, and that he's making these dumbass excuses about it. And that, for me, infuriated me, because it's like, your excuse is stupid. You're Ridley Scott. They gave you money to make Prometheus, which was total garbage. Like, they would throw money at you. Ah, Mavesh, go ahead.
I think, as much as I agree with this whole Exodus fiasco, can we call it a fiasco? Let's just call it a fiasco from now on. I haven't seen the film. It's not out yet. It's a fiasco. But here's the thing with the Ridley Scott thing is, I think it's too easy to say, oh, Ridley Scott, and those comments about, had I hired a Muhammad so-and-so, I wouldn't have got the money. It's just much too easy to write it off as Ridley Scott being about an asshole. It's just too easy. Let's face it, the problem is there. The problem exists. It's systemic. It's much bigger. The thing that Ridley Scott obviously should have done is gone ahead if he didn't get tons of money. I don't know. I mean, we all don't believe that. But even if that was the case, he should have gone ahead and made a fantastic movie on a tiny budget with the right actors. And that would have sort of proved to Hollywood that you can do this and still have a success if you tell a story well. Of course, it's just laziness on his part not to do it. Do you know what I mean? But the problem is obviously much, much bigger. I can't just write it off and say it's Ridley. I can't bring myself to do that because it's not just Ridley.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, Usman, you had a thought. Go ahead.
You know, about the funding that Ridley's got. I said, you know, quite a bit of that is bullshit, especially because there's a movie called The Babadook. It's an Australian horror movie that I just saw about a week ago. I mean, I like horror. So, you know, that's my thing. I will watch anything that's horror. And, you know, the funding for that movie came from a Kickstarter. It was an Indiegogo-funded movie that basically got picked up later. And it's a low-budget movie. It's freaking fantastic. And it was featured in the New York Times, Washington Post, and now everyone is raving about it being the best horror movie of the last 3 years. So, you know, I mean, I think that the point about funding from these guys who obviously know what they're talking about, and when he says that I can't get a movie, funding for a movie with a lead character named Muhammad, it almost borders on racism. The statement itself, you know, starts sounding racist. That was my only point.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that others have said. I mean, they've accused him of saying something that at best is borderline racist. I mean, I understand that in Hollywood that there is still this perception that people of color don't make a lot of money. But I think that perception is false, as made clear by the fact that Will Smith makes tons of money, that we've got characters that do actually can make money, make tons of money for studios that aren't like just Christian Bale. And I feel like it is, Mavesh was saying, it is laziness. It's even if there is this difficulty, if there's this barrier, right? If you're not even trying to cross it, to sort of push against it, then why are you even bothering? Because if you're just there to make a lazy production where you just give up and go for the easy way, that almost makes your project worthless to me. But maybe that's me. I don't know. But we went a little far afield, didn't we?
We kind of did.
Well, Ridley Scott, he brought it on himself. So, well, in any case, we should probably stop before we get into a very long, even longer discussion of Hollywood's practices. But we'll see what the future holds. Maybe
Miss Marvel will appear in the Carol Danvers movie, or maybe she'll get her own movie and Marvel just decides we're going to do 9 movies about Miss Marvel because she's awesome. One can dream. One can dream. So on that note, I will take a moment to get anything you guys would like to plug. So we'll start with you, Mavesh. Anything you'd like to people to know about, your website, things like that?
Well, they can find me on Twitter. I'm at MavishM. That's MAHVESHM. My website is mavishnarath.com. But if you get to Twitter, you can find out everything else as well, as we all do.
And also, Midnight Karachi is on tour.com. So you should definitely check that out.
Midnight in Karachi is on tour.com. The first episode is up, and right now it's bi-weekly, but we'll see how that goes.
Excellent, excellent. Usman, what about you?
So, you know, the only thing that I have to plug is a workshop that I'm doing in Pakistan. It's Pakistan's first science fiction and fantasy and horror workshop. We're doing it in Lahore. And I wanted to do this plug for my future students. We have 12 students lined up, and we're doing it next weekend, next Saturday and Sunday. So hopefully you will get some more Pakistanis submitting science fiction, fantasy, and horror, and hopefully those editors will be looking forward to those manuscripts.
That sounds really awesome. Yeah, I remember hearing about that on Twitter. It's awesome. So good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And obviously, thanks, Rachel and Mike, for being my co-hosts.
You're welcome.
Yay, comics.
Just remember that, Mike, the month of joy was November, so this is December, which means you are automatically wrong about everything related to comics.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be an in-joke that maybe the others don't know. Since I've known Mike, Mike has been wrong about comics always, except for during November. He was allowed to be correct. So, yeah. Well, and thank you very much, Mavesh, for giving us your time and coming on to talk about this. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful to be here and to speak to all of you.
Yeah, excellent. And obviously, thanks, Usman, to you as well. And thanks for coming back, actually. This is your second time.
Thank you very much for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
And on that note, folks, awkward ending and scene.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
From different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.